Excuse me, everyone. We now have Sean Reilly and Keith East in conference. Please be aware each of your lines is in a listen-only mode. At the conclusion of the company's presentation, we will open the floor for questions. To ask a question, you may press the star key followed by the one key on your touch-tone phone. In the course of this discussion, Lamar may make forward-looking statements regarding the company, including statements about its future financial performance, strategic goals, plans, and objectives, including with respect to the amount and timing of any distributions to stockholders. All forward-looking statements involve risks, uncertainties, and contingencies, many of which are beyond Lamar's control and which may cause actual results to differ materially from anticipated results. Lamar has identified important factors that can cause actual results to differ materially from those discussed in this call in the company's fourth quarter 2018 earnings release and its most recent annual report on Form 10-K, as updated or supplemented by its quarterly reports on Form 10-Q and current reports on Form 8-K. Lamar refers you to those documents. Lamar's fourth quarter 2018's earnings release, which contains information required by Regulation G regarding certain non-GAAP financial measures, was furnished to the SEC on Form 8-K this morning and is available on the investor section of Lamar's website, www.lamar.com. I would like to now turn the conference over to Sean Reilly. Mr. Reilly, you may begin.
Thank you, Stephanie, and good morning, everyone. Welcome to Lamar's Q4 and year-end 2018 earnings call. I'm very pleased with the way we closed out 2018. Q4 organic growth was 5.6%, a number we haven't seen in some times, and it's quite gratifying. This brought our full-year organic growth to 3.4% and, importantly, drove our AFO per share to levels that exceeded our expectations. Full-year AFFO per share for 2018 ended up at $5.50 a share, easily exceeding our guidance. Same board digital performance continues to shine, up 10.8% in Q4 and up 7.1% for the full year. We continue to add digital capacity as quickly as possible, adding over 220 units in 2018 and targeting a goal of 250 units in 2019. And, of course, we closed on the Fairway transaction in December. The integration of the Fairway assets is going well. Indeed, the $4 million in promised synergies are already largely in place, and we are looking forward to significant contributions from these new assets to our 2019 AFFO per share growth. Turning to our AFFO per share guidance for 2019, please note the range provided in our release of $5.67 to $5.83 per share. The midpoint of the range reflects 3% pro forma top line growth and 2% pro forma expense growth. Our full year pacings are actually stronger than 3%, and as of today, position us towards the top end of that range. Regarding Q1 2019 guidance, Q1 guidance, pacings are softer than 3. Let's call it 2 and some change. We had one major advertiser shift several million dollars around, and while they will spend as much or more with us for the full year, a chunk fell out of Q1 and moved to the rest of 2019. So again, midpoint of 2019 AFFO per share guidance reflects 3% pro forma growth. Full-year pacings are presently north of that. Q1 pacings are presently south of that at 2 and some change. Keith will give you some color on expected Q1 expenses, which will come in a little heavier than 2%. However, we are confident that when we close out 2019, expenses for the full year will come in around the familiar 2% range. Keith?
Good morning, everyone. As Sean mentioned, our fourth quarter was really strong organic revenue and EBITDA growth. As such, our organic expense growth was up 5%. On our last earnings call, we stated that we expected our Q4 expenses to be higher than our usual 2%. This was primarily due to the additional bonuses and sales commissions because of the strong revenue growth in the quarter. For the full year of 2018, organic revenue growth, as Sean said, was 3.4, organic EBITDA growth was 4.9, and organic expense growth was 2.2, which is our normal range, somewhere between 1 and 2% on expense growth. Free cash flow for 2018 after dividends was $110 million. We expect something similar in 2019. We had mentioned earlier in a press release that the company was planning on asking the board to increase the dividends for 19 by 5%, and we will have that board meeting on February 28th, and hopefully they will approve that. We expect organic consolidated expense growth in Q1 of 19 to be approximately 4%. Two things that contribute to that number. Number one, Q1 18 expense growth, if you will recall, was negative 1.1% last year. And secondly, there are some one-time expenses that will hit Q1 related to the Fairway acquisition that we closed on December 21st of 2018. For the full year, our internal budget projections call for consolidated organic expense growth of 2%. To help you with your model, our CapEx budget for 19 is $128 million in total, $80 million in growth CapEx, and $48 million in maintenance CapEx. We are projecting cash interest expense to be approximately $148 million. Cash taxes at the TRS will be approximately $10 million. TRS is our taxable REIT subsidiary. Anyway, that's about it, Sean.
Great. Thanks, Keith. I'll touch on a couple of metrics that we commonly call out on this call, and then I'm going to talk about a couple of initiatives we have going that I think you're going to find of interest. So I mentioned digital and the count. With the Fairway acquisition, we acquired 149, and we added organically about again, a little over 220 in 2018. So that brings our year-end 18 total digitals in the air to 3,220. Again, our goal for 19 is to add 250 more, given that we are seeing such strong same board performance. National local, please note we code political local, so this number is a little bit skewed for that reason. But Q4, local increased 8.1%, national increased 3.1%. Regarding political, in Q4 it added about 1%, a little over 1% to that 5.6% organic growth, so the core was right at around 4.5%. For the full year, political added about 0.6 to 0.7% to our otherwise organic growth. Verticals, some real strong performance, obviously, in the fourth quarter. I'd point out hospitals up 8%, education up 8%, financial up 9%. Here's an outlier. Insurance was up 82%. That's the law of small numbers. But, you know, GEICO did pop into our top 10 advertisers for the first time in a while. Auto for Q4 was down 2, and I want to pause and think with you a little out loud about what's going on with auto. Last year, we hired a consultant to help us do a deep dive into the local auto dealer vertical. Through that effort, we developed some insights into how their business model is changing, how they're viewing their ad spend across all media, and how they view out of home. As you know, all other media are struggling with the declining auto ad spend. These insights helped us roll out some initiatives targeted directly at the local auto dealers early this year, and the early results are promising. Auto for us Q1 is pacing up 3%, and as you know, it's down for most other verticals. And interestingly, it's pacing up 4.5% for the full year. Now, it's early yet, but this is against the backdrop of declining auto ad spend in other platforms. So I look forward to giving you updates on that and how it progresses through the year. But, again, the early returns are promising. Number two, 2019 looks to be the year when programmatic automated buying begins to bring digital dollars to our platform in a way that will make real incremental contributions to our pro forma growth. We have expanded our number of partners in this endeavor from 1 to 4 to go after these dollars, and we've made the necessary investments last year to make sure our platform is truly plug and play. And again, I look forward to updating you on our progress in this programmatic initiative as the year moves along as well. With that, Stephanie, I'm happy to open it up for questions. Stephanie?
Thank you. At this time, we will open the floor for questions. If you'd like to ask a question, you may press the star key followed by the one key on your touchtone phone now. Again, if you'd like to ask a question, you may press star one now. Our first question comes from David Mills with Imperial Capital.
Yeah, hey guys, congratulations on the stellar results. Couple for you, Sean. So on the Fairway integration, how would you characterize like how that's going so far, and how do you think that integration so far is different than some of the other acquisitions that you guys have done, you know, say over the last 2 or 3 years? And then also, and maybe Keith, if you want to chime in, I've got, if you have an end of year digital board count of 3,220, then that means, at least by my models, you installed 336 digitals in 2018, which would be a record for installation 2018. Do I have that number right? And then I have a follow-up. Thanks.
Sure. Hey, thanks, David. Let me hit the digital thing real quick. I think you may be conflating the ones we acquired with the ones we built.
Got it.
Yeah, so with Fairway, we acquired, let me give you that number again, 149.
Okay, there it is.
And regarding Fairway, yeah. On the integration of Fairway, it's going very, very well. You know, typically the low-hanging fruit is on the expense side, and that happens pretty quickly. And as I mentioned, those promised synergies are largely in place and going fine. And then usually there's a little lift on the top line as we bring sort of a different philosophy of sales management and and how we go about going after new business to the platform. And, you know, that takes a little longer, and, you know, that will happen over the next, you know, let's call it 12 to 18 months. But the $4 million that we noted when we released the transaction, that's, again, largely in place because it's largely on the expense side.
Okay, and then I would be remiss if I didn't say to Keith, congratulations on your retirement. We will miss you. You were wonderful to work with over the years.
Thanks, David.
Thank you very much, David. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Alexia Quadrani with J.P. Morgan.
Hi, thank you. Just a few questions. First off, I apologize if I missed it, but did you give us what the local was in the fourth quarter ex-political? And then I just wanted to see if you had a sense of, you know, when you look at the pacings for Q1, kind of high, you know, where the strength is, national versus local. And then I have one more.
Sure. So local Q4 was up 8.1 and national Q4 was up 3.1. I don't have it expressed as a percentage of local, but I have it as expressed, political expressed as a percentage of total organic growth, and that would be a little over 1%. So if you look at, 5.6 minus a little over 1, let's call the all other core growing at about 4.5%. I don't have a local national number for you yet for the first, we'll have to wait till the next call to.
And then just looking at Q1, you talked about the major advertisers sort of pushed off into the rest of the year. You guys tend to have pretty good visibility. It sounds like you're pretty convinced that there is you are going to see it materialize the rest of the year. I guess any color on your level of confidence of that. Just on political, you know, you had a great political year in 2018. I guess, did you see anything different from political spending in this past cycle that may, you know, have us look at political differently going forward?
Sure. So that large advertiser, you can probably guess who they are, they have contracted with, so these dollars are actually in billing, so, you know, that's about as visible as you can get. And as of now, they're contracted for slightly more than they contracted in 2018. It's just the timing of when their spend is going to come in. Then, you know, if you look at our pacings, you know, pacings are pacings. They're a snapshot in time. Right now, we're pleased with full-year pacings. And, you know, you still have to sell in the period, for the period, to make the period, as I preach to our folks every day. But, you know, things are looking good as we sit here today. The other question was about, Alexi, what?
Political. You had such a great, you know, political year in 2018. I wonder if anything was different that you sort of learned about it, how we should think about it differently going forward.
Well, one thing we learned is that if you really focus on a vertical, you can make a difference. And we made a concerted effort to go after those dollars last year, and it paid off. I will note that, you know, it's an odd year this year. It's not an even year. What do we usually get in political in an odd year? We usually get between 2.5 and 3 million. So if you're trying to think about, you know, what's the delta that Lamar needs to make up, you know, let's call it $7.5 to $8 million that, you know, we're scrambling after and we feel good about making up, if that's helpful.
Yeah, that's very helpful. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Marcy Reivicker with Wolfe Research.
Thank you. A couple questions. First, Sean, that 10.8%, I think, same board digital, did that have any political in it, or is that totally core?
You know, it probably has some political in it, Marcy. You know, I don't have it broken out. I can probably get it for you, though. But, you know, one thing that politics seems to be about these days is tit for tat, and our digital platform is pretty good at that because they can change it at their whim. It's a very responsive medium.
And then can you tell us what percent auto is of your book as a category at this point?
Yes. Yeah. Let me turn to that real quick. So I'm glad you highlighted auto because we're making a concerted effort at targeting that vertical this year in ways that we haven't in the past, and I think it's going to bear fruit. So automotive is now 5%, and as you know, historically it's been 6%, and
yeah,
it's had its challenges of late, and that's going after it. And like I said, I'm going to give you guys updates on how we're doing there as the year progresses because I think. But it's an important vertical across a whole lot of advertising platforms, and we intend to get our share.
Got it. And then the last one's either for you or for Keith. There were two one-time items in the guide reconciliation for AFFO and FFO. Can you just talk a little bit about that $15 to $20 million one-time non-cash tax adjustment? I think it's related to Fairway. And then the $11 million reclass from lease revenue to something else. We're just trying to figure out how that is impacting the AFFO guide.
Marcy, I'm going to let our corporate controller address that question. Obviously, as of January 1 of 19, all companies have to comply with a new FASB rule concerning the capitalization of their leases out front, clear us, anybody that has lease obligations. And it is we will capitalize our lease obligations. It will add about $1.3 billion in assets to our balance sheet and $1.3 billion in capitalized debt. It's not debt. according to any of our credit agreements. It's just a gap measurement similar to asset retirement obligations. And in our AFFO calculation, it is an item that we do use to reconcile. Again, it's a non-cash item like depreciation, amortization.
Yep.
Do you want to elaborate a little bit?
Yeah, Marcy, on the lease accounting for the $11 million, our revenue contracts currently are accounted for as a lease, and under the new standard they won't be. So under RevRec, we have to capitalize install costs. And for modeling purposes, you would roll out $11 million as a credit to direct labor throughout the year, like probably over 10 months, 9 or 10 months is the average life of our contract. So it's a one-time event unless our revenue portfolio would change a lot. So we're treating it as non-cash for AFFO. The lease standard nor fairway adjustment have any effect on AFFO for the year.
Okay.
So they both
got
slight net income. On the fairway, it's strictly related to the fact that the fairway companies didn't elect REIT status in 2018. They're going to elect it in 2019. And when they do, they have to write off a deferred tax liability similar to the way we did it. So that we're estimating between $15 and $20 million would be a tax benefit in the period they elect REIT status. So the accounting you would model over 10 months, and this scenario just depends when they elect REIT status in 2019.
And just to clarify, none of these charges or benefits will affect our EBITDA. Our EBITDA will be accounted for as we have always accounted for it, so it will be comparative, apples to apples, quarter over quarter, year over year, for 2019.
Got it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Eric Handler with MKM Partners.
Good morning. Thank you very much for the question. Wondered if you could talk a little bit about how your acquisition pipeline is shaping up for 2019.
So we have about $240 million under various stages of agreement, some under letter agreement, some actual under APA. Teamed up for this year. So it's going to be another active year, in my opinion. You'll note, just for to highlight, that we raised $250 million in a fairly attractive high-yield tack-on to one of our existing notes for purposes of recharging our revolver so that we would have the capacity to take care of the opportunities as they come in this year. But, you know, as of right now, that's what it looks like, and they're all very attractive, and we certainly have the power to do it.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Jason Bazinet with Citi.
I think it was maybe 4 years ago. You all used to give sort of the utilization and the rate. And if I remember correctly, if you went into sort of the full economic cycle, if things got weak, utilization dropped and pricing dropped, then utilization came back and then pricing came back as sort of the last chapter of the cycle. And you guys put up just such good numbers. I was wondering if you could give any sort of qualitative, I don't need the precise numbers, of how much of what you're seeing is really more pricing versus utilization?
Thanks. Sure. Good question. Just to refresh your memory on why we stopped doing it, we moved from monthly revenue recognition to daily revenue recognition about that time, Jason, and it just created white noise in these rate and occupancy figures that made them non-comparative. But that being said, it's pretty clear to me that the gains we are making today are primarily rate-driven. I would argue that given where we are in the cycle, our occupancy is normalized and pretty much is what it is and where it needs to be. And
where we're getting the gains is in rate.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Ben Swinburne with Morgan Stanley.
Thank you. Sean, I know it's always hard to have a direct sort of causal relationship between adding digital capacity and driving revenue, but I'm just wondering, given the strength of the business now and the growth in digital boards, if you could update us on how you think about that supply of inventory impacting revenue. You seem to be seeing a lot of demand in the marketplace, but I know at the same time, I'm sure you'd acknowledge you have to make sure you're balancing that and not creating too much supply that impacts pricing. So just any update on sort of today's marketplace and the ability to drive more digital into your footprint.
Great. Thanks, Ben. Great question. So I would start with the fact that, as I've said in the past, Lamar is a highly decentralized organization. Yield management takes place at the local level. So you've got 200 some odd professionals that run our profit centers that are gauging local demand because they have their finger on the pulse of local ad spend in a way that, I could never replicate here in Baton Rouge. So it's really the sum wisdom of, 200 folks that have their finger on the pulse of local ad spend that drive this decision on how many boards get built. Another check on making sure we don't get too far ahead of ourselves is those local managers, that local management is held accountable for how their boards perform. And so that's sort of your check and balance on getting it right. And then finally, as I've also said before, because we're such the dominant provider of digital out of home in most of our markets, we can modulate supply in a way that that meets demand, just because in many places we're the only large format digital provider. So when you put all that together, we feel pretty confident that we can match up supply with demand. And you've been following us for a while. Sometimes we don't get it right, and same board performance will reflect that. And we can pause, hitting the pause button. And I think you saw us do that a few years ago. So. Again, it's a decentralized exercise. It's not something that happens by mandate or dictate from Baton Rouge. It is, truly an exercise of bottom up, not top down.
Got it. And if I could just ask Keith and your controller a couple of quick other number questions. One, Keith, I don't know if you have the political number for Q1 18, just so we know what we're comping against for the first quarter. And then, if you don't mind, just going back to the items on your AFFO build, the one-time tax adjustment and the ASC 842, I think what's happening here is that net income is benefiting from these two, and then you're adjusting them out from net income to AFFO. Is that accurate? I just wanted to come back to the explanation you gave before to make sure we understand it correctly.
Yes, that's exactly right. The $11 million will be in direct labor, and the other will be on the income tax line for Fairway.
But again, as for GAAP purposes, that will not be reflected in our press release for the next earnings call as a plus to EBITDA.
Okay. Is there any revenue impact from these?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
And as far as for the political in Q1 of last year, it was irrelevant. Most of the I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but I can tell you that the bulk of the political spin came in the back half of last year, third and fourth quarters.
Mostly fourth. Excellent.
Yep.
Okay. Gotcha. Thank you all.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Drew Borsch with Goldman Sachs.
Hi. Thanks for taking the question. Sean, I was wondering if you could give us some color on geographic revenue growth, organic revenue growth for maybe for 4Q and whether there are any sort of outliers plus or minus in terms of the regions.
Sure. So you've heard me say this in the past that, you know, perhaps the flyover states aren't doing quite as well. Happy to report Q4 that the Midwest region was actually pretty strong. Their revenue growth was up 7.3%, which is nice, slightly behind the Western region, which was the strongest. You know, that's California and Oregon and Washington and Nevada. They were up 8.2%. The Northeast was up 7.1%, so it's still sort of a bicoastal phenomenon, but it was nice to see the Midwest have a really good, strong quarter. The oil patch is recovering, Drew, a little bit. You're probably reading about what's going on in the Permian Basin in Texas and the like. Our Southwest region was up 5.8%. So, again, that was pleasant to see. The Atlantic coast was up 5.4%. Central region, which for us is kind of Tennessee, Ohio, around in there, was up 5.4%. The region that struggled the most was the Gulf Coast. That's Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and the Florida Panhandle. Couple of things going on there. While the Permian has recovered for the oil patch, the Gulf has not. And there's still some struggling economies along the Gulf Coast that rely on good, strong activity in the Gulf of Mexico.
Was that Gulf region still positive, or was it actually declining?
Yes. It was positive. It was 0.3%, up 0.3%. There was a little bit of performance, but, you know, the rest of the regions were quite strong.
Yeah, it seems pretty broad-based with the exception of the Gulf and maybe the oil patch a little bit. Another question I have for you, the CapEx guidance of 128, I noticed that's a little bit higher than you guys have been doing in the past. Could you explain maybe why it's ticking up a little bit this year?
Sure. Well, digital, we're budgeting to put up, 250, which would, be more than last year's 220. So some of it is that digital goal that we have. It's, obviously, if we don't get them all in the air, we won't be spending as much on that. The maintenance CapEx is a little bit higher than the previous couple of years. We have a 2008-2009 vintage digital rollout that was that is now needing replacement, so a little bit is falling into that. I would say those are the primary drivers.
Okay. And then just lastly, can you remind us how much visibility you have into full-year revenue? I think in the past you used to talk about maybe somewhere around a quarter of the full-year revenue maybe being sort of booked or you have visibility on. Is that kind of what you have at this point for 19?
No, we're actually, as we closed out January, we're right at 50% booked to that goal.
Okay. That's great. And is that pretty consistent from prior years?
Yeah. I'd say the last, 5-6 years, it's been right around 50% as we close out January, and that's, when we can, take a real good snapshot of how the year's going to turn out. If I go back further in time, go back maybe 15 years, that number used to be around, I'd say 65% would be booked, but a greater percentage of our contracts back then were 12-month. And as the Great Recession cycled through, we got leaner and meaner and taught our customers how to give a shorter notice and quicker turnarounds, and that number fell to about 50, and it stayed there really, I'd say, since the Great Recession.
Okay, great. I appreciate the color. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from George Smith with Davenport Asset Management.
Hey, good morning. You guys seem to have momentum right now that a lot of other mediums do not. And I'm trying to figure out if this is just general economic strength or if you're seeing renewed interest in the category given disruption that we're seeing elsewhere. Or do you sense that there are even new types of buyers coming into the medium, you may be driven by digital or, again, that disruption we're seeing in other areas?
Great question. So let me start by just saying that, you know, one of the things that's driving out of home is the fundamental fact that our audience is growing. More people are spending more time in their commutes than ever before. They're spending more time out of home. They're interacting with our medium more than ever before. So it kind of starts there. And you've got other local media that are struggling with their audience. Their audience is either becoming fragmented or they're turning away. And that's inuring to our benefit to some degree. I can tell you that there are certain categories that are using us in lieu of other media that they used to use. I would point to, for example, in the service category, that's, you know, attorneys and accountants and the like that used to use the Yellow Pages. Yellow Pages don't exist, so they've been coming to us, and service is, quite frankly, our fastest growing vertical right now. Our digital platform is also making us responsive to the needs of advertisers in a way that that is causing them to steer dollars our way. Clearly, amusement, entertainment, and sports is fast growing in our book, and it's primarily because digital is so responsive to their needs that they have time-sensitive or price-sensitive information they need to get out right away. They can use us in a way they haven't been able to before, and, you know, I would argue that some of those categories used to rely on radio more because of the way radio could be responsive to their needs, and as radio listenership dwindles, they're coming to us. So, you know, those are some of the factors that are resulting in out-of-home being a growth medium where a lot of other local media are struggling.
And do you see in discussions with some of the bigger buyers, I mean, are they generally making bigger buys or even broader buys in terms of geography, you know, that blanket more of the country or any, I see that, you know, the pricing is obviously going up, but how about any change to contract duration?
You know, we did have some large customers commit earlier in 18 for their buy in 19 and also buy a little longer. But I would say that, you know, you need to keep in mind that we are intensely local. You know, 77% of our business is local, and that book is built by the sum effect of 1,000 local account executives touching, you know, 30, 40, 50,000 local customers. So it's really sort of that sum effect. So I would point more to if other local media continue to struggle with their audience, it can only inure to our benefit.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. There are no additional questions at this time. I'd like to turn it now to Mr. Riley for closing remarks.
Well, great. Thank you all for listening. I thank you for your interest in Lamar. And, you know, as I mentioned in the press release, we're looking forward to a solid 2019. Thank you all.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's presentation. You may now disconnect.